So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
My God, Geraldine Briscoe is wearing pantyhose.
Oh, no.
What has our business come to?
Uh-oh, what's he going to do with that?
What is that?
Oh, it's a banana.
There's your banana. There's your banana, Briscoe.
What the heck?
Like that, Briscoe.
Put an eye out with that thing, probably.
Be careful, Pat. Don't slip on that peel.
Don't tell him where it's been.
I can see where it came from. Briscoe.
Look at Patterson now.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
I think Ray Stevens just took a walk out in heaven and had a smoke.
Oh, no. Don't. You think he's not another stinky face from... What in the world?
What is that? Oh, for the love of...
I think it's one of those big, huge maxi pads.
It's a sanitary napkin. This is hideous. This is hideous, King.
There goes my shirt up over my head. Oh, my. Oops, there goes my skirt dropping to my feet. Oh, my. Ooh, some kind of touch caressing my legs. Oh, my. Ooh, I'm turning red. Who could this be? I tried and I tried to avoid.
Hello and welcome to Review Away, episode number 199.
Oh, wow.
How are you, Way?
I'm doing great. I feel very homely.
Yes, yes. It's different surroundings today.
Yeah. We're at John Pollock's place.
And why are we here, Way?
Because our Review Away studios are being taken up right now for some boxing voicing.
We were kicked out.
Yeah.
And thus we left. Angrily.
Thanks to Corey Erdman.
So we are going to be doing this show here from my place.
Yep.
And Wade, what have you been up to since Monday night in Review of Raw?
Monday night? I don't know.
Since we last spoke.
I had a shawarma.
Oh, I did too.
You did, eh?
Yeah.
We actually went together. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, that was you at that table.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just a few of...
We also had a celebrity sighting. Local Canadian celebrity sighting that you noted.
I did, yes. I don't know. I mean,
the ongoing history of new burritos was...
It was shawarma.
Oh, shawarma. Is that what I ate?
we saw Alan Cross, but we didn't say anything.
We should have.
We should have, yeah. Now I feel creepy talking about it on the air like some type of stalker.
Well, we just saw him. We didn't follow him there. He followed us, if anything, because he came in right after. Maybe he... is on his own show right now saying there was a local sighting of Y Ting and John Pollack.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, it was kind of funny because we actually, or I don't know if you ever did, but at least I worked on a show with Alan Cross briefly on Ox.
Oh, yes.
Jason Agnew also produced.
Yes. Yeah. What was it called?
Explore Music.
Explore Music, yeah. I didn't work on it, so...
No, you didn't.
I don't know the name of it, but I watched it. I watched it numerous times.
Yeah, but I don't think he recognized me at all, so...
That's unfortunate. Maybe he just didn't get a good view of you.
Perhaps. I mean, I look like any other...
male.
Yeah.
That's 29 years old. I mean, you kind of stand out to me.
Right. Well, anyway, let's move on.
Well, when I... picked this event, I first text messaged you and asked, is this okay? And you said, yeah, pick anything.
Yeah.
And I picked anything. I picked this.
Why did you pick this?
I really don't know, other than it was June, and I had some requests from people to do a King of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at what was available online that I could find easily, and this was the first one. And thus I picked the year 2000. A forgotten King of the Ring, I think.
The worthy choice?
Sure. There was lots on this show to chat about. In Boston, no less. And this was at a time when WWE was really great and WCW was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
This was maybe one of the largest disparities between the two during the Monday Night Wars era.
Near the end.
Yeah, and I thought that this would be a nice kind of a comparison point to the Great American Bash 1999 from last week.
Yes, yes.
This is about as far removed from it as possible, though... A lot of shit on this show.
Some.
Yeah, some.
Not as much, I'd say, but some.
Yeah, this was when the roster was starting to get really a lot deeper. I mean, you had the additions of Benoit, the emergence of Kurt Angle. They were trying to... you could see there were a number of like kind of mid-carders. They were trying to kind of get behind like Hardcore Holly at the time, who had just got injured at this point. Yeah. Val Venus, who they were trying to add a more serious edge to.
Rikishi.
Yeah. So they were kind of not too different from today, where they're taking a lot of mid-carders and trying to move them up,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see how they fared on this event. As we mentioned, June of 2000. I imagine this is the first time you've watched this event.
I'm trying to think if I have seen it. I mean, if I have, I don't remember it at all. So
They had an opening video featuring past King of the Ring winners, even including Billy Gunn, but somehow Mabel did not make the cut. Oh. King Mabel. Viscera.
Yeah.
So, King of the Ring, often hits and misses.
I'd say so. And do you think they'll do one this year?
A King of the Ring?
Yeah.
They haven't done one since 2010. I could see them maybe if they want some gimmick for a three-hour Raw.
Yeah, who won the last one?
I think it was Sheamus. Remember, and he went paraded around with that cape,
right?
And the crown,
like the black crown, like the black cape.
He looked like an idiot. So, King of the Ring has really—we've talked about this before. It's really kind of been replaced by Money in the Bank in terms of the match that kind of establishes a new guy they're going to get behind. And King of the Ring at this time, they actually explained this off the top that the winner of the King of the Ring would get a WWF title shot the next month at the pay per view. Which was not the case, actually. So they changed their mind after this.
Mm.
So what a shitty tournament to go through, and then at the end of it, find out you're not getting the title shot.
Well, that's the thing about this tournament is that I don't know. You win bragging rights, but you know, like with the Rumble, you get a title shot, you get something tangible. With Money in the Bank, you get a title shot, but you win this,
you get a crown.
Nah.
And if you're a heel, you get to be a king. And that's your gimmick for the next year.
But just even more so for the viewer, I mean, why do I care who really wins? You know, what does it actually mean?
Well, I mean, in the past, it was always kind of, it was an indication that you're supposed to take this guy seriously. This is a future main event guy that we're trying to elevate.
Sure. I guess it was really good for a mid-carder to kind of elevate.
Yes. No sign of Billy Gunn on this show. A year removed from his epic
win. Was he injured?
Yes, he was injured at this time. Coming off his big 1999 win, where that catapulted him into losing a Kiss My Ass match at SummerSlam that year.
Oh, great.
There's so many great stipulation matches during the Attitude Era that are just great for reviews.
I know. I look forward to that.
Like, I think this was at the time where the WWF, they started to get a little cocky. They're like, we can put anything on pay-per-view and people are going to buy it.
Well, I will say, like, I mean, stipulation matches like the one on this show... With the evening gowns, it does attract a weird, like, sadistic type of attention, you know, from a casual viewer.
Yeah, this was, I don't know, we'll get into that match when we get to it, but it was very much like, this was not put together for anyone else's enjoyment, but a handful of people, I think, behind the scenes. Like, there was no enjoyment by the crowd of this. It was just fucking...
They hated it.
Beyond embarrassed to be at an event watching this.
I enjoyed it.
Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah.
Wow. Well, we'll get your upside to this match later on. Opening video, it's all based around the title match tonight. Do you want to explain tonight's main event?
Tonight,
very confusing.
Yeah, tonight's main event consists of a six-man tag team match for the World Heavyweight Championship.
Huh?
Meaning, Triple H, the champion, is on a team with his... Uh-oh. Who's that? You got to read it out.
It says, "That's fine."
Okay. It's
from our friend Ariel Helwani.
Okay. Why? That what's fine?
I'm going to interview him at 3, and I don't have to go back to the studio to do it, so that's good.
You felt the need to interrupt our podcast.
I should have had my phone off.
For your other show, huh? Your more important
show. I'm planning multiple shows, and sometimes they overlap.
As I was, before I was rudely interrupted, Triple H, the champion, is teaming with Shane and Vince, and they're taking on the team of Kane, The Undertaker, The Biker Undertaker, and The Rock. And the stipulation suggests that if whoever makes the pinfall, basically, becomes a champion. Unless, it was, unless it was Shane or Vince, is that what it meant?
They didn't make it that clear, because that's what I was wondering during the main event, was that if Vince gets the pin, does he win the title? Yeah. Because there was one spot where Vince went for the pin, and Lawler was like, I was getting deja vu of when Vince had won the title the prior year, so that makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
This is an extremely confusing main event.
But basically, you know, if Kane pins Shane, then he would become the champion. It's yeah, it was weird, but I have to say, like, the match itself wasn't all that bad.
People were just... I mean, The Rock was so over at this point. And let's not forget, this was also the time, not only was Billy Gunn and Hardcore Holly injured, but so was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
So, lots of depth issues.
Foley had just left.
Austin was out here with his neck surgery at the time. So, it was really, Rock and Hunter were two focal points. And The Undertaker had only just come back the month prior with the new motorcycle gimmick. Mm-hmm. So, this was the new Undertaker. The announcers for the night are Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. They promote the fact that this show sold out in 5 minutes in Boston.
Wow.
Must have been nice to have been on a hot period like that. Five minutes to sell at this arena. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were looking forward to this tournament at the time because you had the likes of Jericho, Angle, Benoit, Eddie Guerrero.
Well, think of all the dream matches, you know?
Oh, yeah. And look at all the nightmare matches that they created out of these. We start off with Rikishi and Chris Benoit to open up the tournament. It's an 8-man, one-night tournament. And they show here how Rikishi beat Benoit for the Intercontinental title on SmackDown leading into this pay-per-view. And then Benoit attacked him with a chair afterwards. So the match starts, Benoit is tossed into steps on the floor, and then Benoit attacks him with chops, applies the crossface, but Rikishi makes it to the ropes, and Benoit, just seeing how this crossface didn't work, says, fuck this, I'm going to make this guy feel pain. And he goes to the outside, grabs a chair, and in plain view of the referee, just starts attacking Rikishi for a DQ at 3 minutes and 26 seconds, and just continually beats the shit out of Rikishi with this chair, including attacking his arm, and then puts him back into the crossface. The officials need to come out to help him, and this all builds up to a spot where all the officials are standing above Rikishi, and as Benoit dives off the top with a headbutt, all of them part like the Red Sea as Benoit lands on Rikishi. But what an odd use of probably your best worker in this tournament, and you eliminate him with just a stupid finish.
Yeah, I guess they want to protect Rikishi. They want to send Rikishi. I mean, this was a time also when Rikishi was becoming an actual big star. He was kind of the breakout act within Too Cool, and just really gaining a ton of actual real momentum. And I guess they just didn't want to have him lose, or didn't want to have Benoit lose either. But in my opinion, this makes Benoit look even worse. I mean, just he basically gave up and attacked his opponent with the chair. So, thinking about all the potential matchups that there could have been, they teased a Benoit Jericho match taking part out of this, and you didn't get that. You know, you didn't get Benoit Angle.
You didn't get Benoit anybody.
No,
not even Benoit Rikishi in 3 minutes. Yeah. This wasn't even like a quality Raw match. This was like a throwaway TV match.
So not even one good match really out of him, and not very great for Chris Benoit.
And also take into account the fact that, you know, they would obviously change their plan of the winner of this tournament not getting the title shot at the next pay-per-view. But guess who would get the WWF title shot at Fully Loaded?
Chris Benoit! That's weird.
Really weird.
Yeah.
The guy who you could argue had the worst showing of anyone in the opening round gets the title shot. They had a clip from Sunday Night Heat with Michael Cole speaking to Linda McMahon, because all the McMahons were in Boston for this event, and she is here to confront Vince McMahon tonight.
Boy, yeah. Nothing's really changed, you know?
It's 13 years later.
Triple H, Steph, and Vince on my TV.
The only one who has evolved is Shane, who left this company years ago.
And Linda.
Linda.
Yeah.
Vince and Shane are then with Hunter and Stephanie in their office. And Vince says he is not losing his cool tonight. He's going to put Linda back in her place. And then he would start to refer to himself with this term that we would have to hear all night long, that Vince is Joe Cool. And that's what everyone would refer to him all night as, Joe Cool.
That never caught on.
Surprisingly not.
Joe Cool.
Joe Cool, his alter ego. Oh, that could be the babyface, Vince McMahon. His alter ego. Michael Cole is with Ben on the back and asks what everyone at home was thinking, saying, what the fuck was that? And Benoit says, I know I'm the best technical wrestler, and I do what I want when I want. What a dumb reason.
Yeah. I lose when I want to lose.
If I don't want a title shot, or winning a tournament, or being successful in my chosen profession, then I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Some great, great explanation to an odd finish. Next up was Eddie Guerrero, accompanied by China, taking on Val Venus, who was paired with Trish Stratus. And how do you take a porn star and make him a serious character? Well, you give him a Eurobeat version of his theme song, which is what Val came out to here.
Were they actually trying to make him serious?
They were definitely trying to make him his character more serious here, but not changing his name, which still does rhyme with penis.
Yeah.
So that was tough. And then, I don't know, Val Venus was just a character that I think if he had gotten a different gimmick, might have had more longevity.
Or might have had none.
Maybe. Maybe he wouldn't have caught on at all.
Yeah.
One thing he did catch on with was the Scott Putski list of nominees. This guy was big.
Yeah.
A large, large man during an untested period.
I would put him up there.
Eddie Guerrero knows, factually was...
Mm-hmm. Oh, Chris Benoit.
Benoit. Chris. I mean, this was a time when, hey, Vince McMahon doesn't want people looking tiny on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're embarrassments, he says. So Eddie Guerrero and Val Venus. Venus attacked Guerrero with Boss Man's nightstick on SmackDown, and that has set up this. And Guerrero takes Venus to the floor, hits him with...
This was also a King of the Ring.
Oh, yeah, opening round of the tournament. Venus drops Guerrero on the barricade, and then Guerrero hits a superplex off the top, goes for a surfboard, and we got puppy chants for Trish Stratus just to... Everything's kind of gone full circle, because just a week ago, Caitlyn started getting puppy chants on Raw, so it's like everything goes in cycles. Venus hits a spinebuster, goes for his finisher, the money shot, as they were still in the infancy of trying to tighten up his character. Guerrero got his knees up, goes for a cradle, gets a two count, and then Venus tries using the ropes for a pin, but only gets a two count. And this is when Guerrero hits a hurricane run off the turnbuckle as Trish gets on the apron. China then grabs Trish for the biggest reaction of the match, and then Venus grabs China, but ends up taking a forearm, and Guerrero gets a near fall, and Venus comes back, hits his fisherman suplex, and gets the win at 8:05. So instead of Benoit and Eddie, which I think most people would have assumed would have been the semifinal match, no, you're getting Val Venus and Rikishi. I think that's just them having fun with the audience.
It could have been. I mean, you know, they also have different expectations than what we do, of course, about who's a good wrestler and whatnot. But that fisherman suplex, was that his new finisher as a serious wrestler?
I guess so, yeah. You don't really associate that move with him, but he was using it for a bit, I guess. Yeah.
And why was Trish with him?
Just because. He needed a... Well, they explained that they were just business acquaintances at the beginning of the match. There's nothing more to it.
I don't know. I didn't really understand any type of logic about why she was there. And Trish at this time really was still a silent manager.
Yes.
She wasn't doing much.
Yeah, she was busy here with Val Venus and TNA.
Yeah.
Pat Patterson is in the back, and the, I guess, wardrobe person is showing him all these dresses, and he's being all picky about what dress he wears tonight. And says, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right.
Did we explain off the top what this was for?
These two men were going to have an evening gown match for the hardcore title and dress in women's attire for everyone's enjoyment.
And how did this come about?
I don't know.
Well, this was during the time of the... This was for the hardcore title, which was still had the 24/7 rule in effect. And Patterson somehow won the hardcore title and from Briscoe, because Briscoe had won it somehow. And so in an effort to hide from Briscoe, who wanted to win the title back, Patterson decided to put a dress and a wig on and hide in the women's locker room. Meanwhile, Briscoe got wind of this, and he himself dressed in a gown and a wig, and so that he could go into the women's locker room and attack Briscoe. And then... all of a sudden, Vince McMahon sees these two grown men in dresses and wigs and decided to make this match. That's how it happens.
That's great. That's a great setup for a hardcore title match. And they show Patterson a skirt, and he asks, what is this, Michael Jackson's mini skirt? And he says he wants something from Hollywood so he can look thin, sexy, and better than Briscoe because he is the champion of hardcore.
I think he's so funny. These two are hilarious.
They embrace these roles wholeheartedly. Yeah. Never took themselves seriously for an instant. Jonathan Coachman is with Rikishi with a health update and says what he has been through is nothing compared to what he is going to do to Val Venus. Right. That's how he ended.
What?
He was saying right, but he like played it out. This is how he ended all his interviews on this pay-per-view. Right.
Sounded like rot to me.
Well, he was maybe rotting as he was cutting this promo in front of us.
So is the big man able? Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Right.
But that was a good catchphrase. Could have been a great t-shirt.
Right.
Right.
I don't know.
Next up in the opening round, Crash Holly against Bull Buchanan.
I have no idea how these two made it onto the pay-per-view, much less the tournament.
Well, Crash was pretty over at this time in that whole hardcore division.
I guess so. Yes. But, I mean, how did he make it into the King of the Ring?
Well, he won all his matches by, you know, fluke, as he would in this match. They announced Holly weighing in at an alleged 400 pounds because he was a super heavyweight at the time. Mm-hmm. He knew Vince's mentality. And this was met with a boring chant 2 minutes into this. Lawler says,
like, what do you expect when you put two guys on a pay-per-view that people don't really care about?
Lawler had a great Jerry Lawler joke during this. He said, my dad is from Wales, but my mother is from a normal human being.
Yeah. I heard it.
You didn't write it down? No. Bull Buchanan is just taking everything from the start as Crash is selling, and they play up Holly as the ultimate underdog. Buchanan hits a big boot. Holly gets a small package for a two count, and then Buchanan misses a scissors kick, and Holly uses a Mahastral cradle and rolls up Buchanan for the win at 4 minutes and 7 seconds, with Buchanan fuming after the match at this loss.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after Buchanan had been kind of taken away from Big Boss Man, and he was another guy they were kind of starting to push, but then having Crash Holly beat him here.
Yeah.
Not someone I had a lot of high expectation for.
No, me neither.
He had that balding look that was kind of tough, and he got into it a lot older, at least in the WWE. I mean, he was, you know. He'd get into Right to Censor. That would be his next gimmick.
Right to Censor, and then he became B2.
B2, yeah. his forgotten character.
Yeah.
But maybe most well-remembered for some. Vince then walks into Linda's office and asks if she is here to meddle in his business, and says that Linda reinstated Steve Austin after he had fired him, put Foley in the main event of WrestleMania this year, made Shawn Michaels the spokesperson of the WWE, brought back Dave Hebner, brought back The Undertaker, and then Linda asks if he's going to do the main event straight up tonight or if it's going to be a numbers game.
What was that about Dave Hebner?
I have no clue. I don't recall this angle at all involving Dave Hebner.
Brought back Dave Hebner, like in the 80s?
Maybe. Back. I don't know what happened to Dave Hebner. Maybe he was fired during an episode and brought back. Mm-hmm. Vince tells Linda never to question him, and he will be victorious tonight in the main event. So this was what Linda got onto an airplane and came to the King of the Ring for. This was Vince confronting Linda, not vice versa.
Yeah, she did the walk, and then she did this. I mean, it's clear from watching these vignettes who the performers are in the family and who aren't. And
break it down. Which one?
Well, I mean, definitely Vince, but Linda, definitely not.
The greatest line ever on a wrestling show. No, Vince, I want a divorce. Great Linda moments all coming to mind right now. Remember when she kicked Jim Ross in the balls?
Yeah, the heel Linda McMahon.
And then CNN played that on on rotation during her night, her first time losing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great moments. Final opening round match for the King of the Ring tournament. It was Kurt Angle against Chris Jericho. And Angle comes out, cuts a promo about this being a special night for himself. And he's going to do what the Bruins, Celtics, Patriots, and Red Sox couldn't do, and that is win. How timely with the Boston Bruins just losing in the Stanley Cup Finals to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Wow.
Talk about a promo that holds up. Mm-hmm. Kurt Angle, ahead of the times. And he says he's going to bring home the big one. And then Jericho comes out and calls him Kirk Angel, calls him the king of goofy, ugly ring attire, and the king of all the nerds. He is also the king of the 30-year-old virgins and a royal pain in the ass before the big one, calling him Jerky.
Yeah.
Promo that doesn't quite hold up 13 years later.
No, no. And I find that the current 2013 Chris Jericho is trying to get back to this character, which I just... I guess at the time, depending on how young you are, you probably like. He's kind of cool, but no, it's actually quite lame.
Angle gets sent into the barricade on the floor, but then Angle comes back with an Irish whip into the steps. Jericho hit an underhook into a backbreaker back into the ring. Angle catapulted Jericho into the corner, suplexing him. A crowd was certainly into this match. Angle hit a bridging German for a two count. Jericho runs into a boot in the corner, but then drop kicks Angle on the turnbuckle, and Jericho then hits a Hurricane Rana off the turnbuckle. And Jericho eventually turns his back on Angle, gets hit from behind, and this takes out Teddy Long. So Stephanie McMahon, who was kind of aligned with Kurt Angle this time, they were doing this the whole tease of whether the two whether Stephanie had a crush on Kurt Angle. Mm-hmm. And this would go on all summer long. And Stephanie comes in, and Jericho ducks the weakest belt shot I have ever seen thrown by Stephanie McMahon, who then hits Angle, and Angle unfortunately has to sell this belt shot that he is out from the clutches of Stephanie McMahon's power. And Jericho then, to get under Stephanie's skin, makes out with her against her will. And this leads to Angle then hitting the Angle Slam and pinning Jericho at 9 minutes and 50 seconds. So he advances, and we're going to get the dream match. Angle Holly won.
pretty good match, but you know, you see Kurt Angle at this point in his career, and he was good, but just not great yet. You know, definitely above average here, but I didn't find a lot of his moves or timing as crisp as it would get shortly after this.
Yeah, I agree. This is probably the best of the four opening matches. I mean, Venus and Guerrero was okay. This was okay as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, nothing that's, you know, crazy. Shane is upset with Vince because now the main event is a no disqualification match, we have learned. And Vince is asking where Shane's confidence is since he's a McMahon. And Shane is worried about Triple H's confidence. And Vince says, well, that's a good point.
Man. A lot of McMahons.
And a lot of pointless vignettes.
Yeah.
Like, pointless. Like, what is the basis of this? Oh, okay. We're going to tease that they're doubting Triple H's confidence.
It's just, it adds nothing to the main event that I've already paid for.
Then we went to a cutaway, which was one of the worst WWF New York cut-ins we have ever seen here.
Look at this! Mick, JR, can you hear me? How are you, Mick?
Hey, the fans seem to really be enjoying themselves.
How have you found your party at the entertainment complex?
Well, as you know, that 15-year wrestling gig I had kind of came to an end. So I'm looking at some different things.
Why don't you explain this way? When you have someone on location like this, tell us about the setup here and why this was so fucking difficult, because this was fucking inaudible for us at home, and I think for Mick Foley in this restaurant.
Right. Well, they had Mick Foley here do
with a shaved head.
With a shaved head. Was this when he debuted the shaved head?
Yes, this was the first time he had done it, because he shaved his head with the idea, I'm never going to be on television again. And right as he shaved it, they called him and said, do you want to be the commissioner? Which is what they would do the night after King of the Ring.
And so Mick Foley was here in WWF New York sitting in, and all of a sudden you see a woman in the background, this bartender, try to hand Mick a drink and try to get him to get his attention. And it's Ivory. They made Ivory the bartender here. And she, you know, poor girl, they didn't even let her sit and watch. She had to put her to work. So, you know, Jim Ross and King are trying to talk to Foley, and Foley can't hear shit because this crowd is all surrounding him, and it's just way too loud. So they just kind of struggled their way through it. It was not fun at all. And of course, I just remember, like, I remember you mentioning somewhere about how you didn't want to ask Foley about Hell in a Cell. and how, you know, you felt like you needed to anyway. But, and so, of course, JR brings up Hell in a Cell in this interview.
And Foley's just like, yeah, yeah, that, some people think that's the greatest match I was ever in. And who knows, maybe someone tonight will have an even bigger moment.
Yeah.
He said this so unenthusiastically.
Yeah.
And also noted that Kurt Angle is his personal favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of weird.
Mm.
The semifinals are now set for the tournament. And Edge and Christian come out. They cut a promo on the Boston Red Sox, which would be promo number two on the local sports team. They say, after mentioning Larry Bird, Bobby Orr, Nomar Garciaparra, those are positive Boston moments, but they're going to do a five-second pose to illustrate the greatest Boston sports moment ever. And they reveal Christian wearing a Red Sox jersey, Edge with a New York Mets jersey, and they reenact the Bill Buckner play from 1986, where he lets the ball go through his legs, and boy, was this crowd so upset.
What was that moment? What happened?
It was the
World Series?
It was the World Series, and Bill Buckner had like a routine ground ball,
yeah,
and it was like it went right through his legs.
And they lost on that play?
I don't know if it was like the tying run or whatnot. Okay. But Boston fans are very sore about that.
Sure.
But you know what? A few years after this event, they'd win the World Series. Yeah. So who cares? Too Cool, who were the tag team champions here.
Yeah, Too Cool with wow. a lot of momentum
yep.
at this time.
Defending the tag titles in a four-way against Edge and Christian, the Hardys, and Test and Albert.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Hardy came out. He had his multicolored hair. Lots of black gear in this match. Did you notice between the Hardys, Albert, Test, just all dressing in black.
Looks cool.
I guess. Test hit Matt with a big boot, and then Matt countered a pump handle slam, but then Trish gets on the apron, and Matt Hardy tries to punch Trish, but Lita takes Trish down, avoiding Matt Hardy punching her in the face as the crowd cheer, yeah, punch her. Test grabs Lita, and then Matt hits the Twist of Fate to Test. Albert then grabs Lita for a tree slam. Matt makes the save here, and Test hits him with a pump handle slam. Then Jeff makes a save with a swanton, and it all ends with Matt pinning Test. And it's elimination here, so they're the first team out. Jeff then jumps into an awkward flapjack here by Scotty Too Hotty. Edge and Christian are beating down on Jeff as Lita comes off the top and hits this crazy Hurricane Rana to Edge.
Was this no DQ or something?
It's weird with those four ways. They never really do countouts or DQs.
Yeah.
But I guess some liberal use of the rules.
Lita here. I mean, part of the babyface team was just interfering in plain view of the referee.
It was kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Christian hit his kill switch, the unprettier, whatever you want to call it, and pins Matt. And this crowd was so pissed that the Hardys were eliminated. Just vociferous boos here. Like, oh, you're leaving us with Too Cool as the baby faces?
Yeah.
This sucks. And Lawler is upset, but for other reasons, because now the two teams that are gone mean Trish and Lita have left ringside. Brian Christopher hits a neck breaker to Edge, and they do these double team spots on Christian. Edge hits a spinning heel kick to Scotty as Christian mocks their dancing, and Christopher then responds by spitting his gum into Christian's face. As Scotty makes a hot tag to Christopher, he gets in. There's a sit-out powerbomb to Edge by Christopher, who then runs into a double flapjack by Edge and Christian. Then they do the worm pose, but Scotty cuts them off and hits his worm to just a gigantic reaction. This was the biggest pop of this match by far,
mm-hmm.
this worm
yep.
that was incredibly over in 2000. And then Scotty holds Edge for the top rope leg drop by Brian Christopher, but Christian comes in with a belt shot to Christopher with the ref's back turned. Edge gets placed on top of Christopher, and they win the tag titles back 14 minutes and 12 seconds.
Yeah, I found wrestling-wise and work rate-wise, this is more of a standard match, and like a lot of the more memorable matches of this era between Edge and Christian and the Hardys.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did Too Cool ever win the titles after this?
I don't think so. I think this was it. Scotty would win them later, but this was kind of the peak for Brian Christopher.
Yeah.
Michael Cole is with Crash Holly, who is upset that people are stunned that he won tonight. And he's upset over losing the hardcore title to Pat Patterson and says, Kurt Angle is in big trouble, mister. Channeling his inner Michelle Tanner.
Yes.
Rikishi comes out with this nasty bruise on his right arm, stemming from the chair shots by Chris Benoit. And they show the angle with Val Venus from SmackDown 3 weeks prior. Just all these hit and runs on SmackDown, all these attacks on guys.
They showed Val Venus doing a... Oh, sorry, Rikishi taking a giant bump off the stage.
Yeah, that was the angle here. Yeah, just threw him off the stage.
That was amazing. But, you know, it's amazing to see a guy the size of Rikishi do something like that. But then you think back and, like, this guy would regularly jump off the top rope as part of the head shrinkers all the time. So it's not that crazy. But he has.
Well, he also put on all that weight after his head shrinker days. Mm-hmm. It was head shrinking and stomach expanding.
Oh.
We got Rikishi and Val Venus here, semifinals. Rikishi sends Val Venus right into the steps and then runs into Venus back first in the corner. And there's an armbar takedown by Venus, who attacks the injured arm of Rikishi and wrapping it around the post.
Is there any other... Sorry to cut you off. Is there any other, like, scenario in life where you could, I don't know, see it as a good thing to gain that much weight?
Maybe for a movie role?
Yeah, those are... I mean, you lose it right after, I guess.
Oh, Rikishi never lost this weight.
No. I mean, he made way more money with this weight than he did without.
What conscience would you have if you called someone and said, I want you to gain, like, 150 pounds?
Yeah.
Okay, we want you to be this fat guy that's going to wear a thong. Like, I'd be like, yeah, go fuck yourself.
I want you to develop early diabetes and maybe just, you know...
No more gym work.
Yeah.
So... Venus attacks the arm. He comes off the top and gets hit with a belly-to-belly suplex out of nowhere. And Rikishi gets the win, 3 minutes and 16 seconds. Not too much to talk about here of this match. Very quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really notice Rikishi selling that arm all too much.
Well, he had it taped up for the finals. I don't think he had it taped it up. He taped it up in the second match.
No, he didn't.
But Venus did work over it. Then, after the match, Trish jumps onto the back of Rikishi, who flips her over, puts her in the corner, and goes for the bonsai drop, but Val Venus low blows him, and then Venus grabs the steel steps and attacks the bad arm with the steps, and then attacks it with a chair to further injure the arm and kind of continue that the arm story with Rikishi going into the finals hurt. Jonathan Coachman is then with Jerry Briscoe, who laughs about the stipulation. And Briscoe's upset over this match, said he is running on the emotion of revenge, to which Coachman says, that's not an emotion, Jerry. And
would a reporter actually say that?
I don't know.
Say that if you're interviewing a UFC fighter and they're like, I'm running on the emotion of revenge, would you?
I'd probably look at the camera with a funny look, so people at home would know I know what he just said. From there, though... He says that Pat Patterson stole the title and Jerry Briscoe is all man. And then his gown arrives right after he said he's all man. Huh. And the woman asks, do you want your panties regular or crotchless? Hilarious. Regular or crotchless panties,
that's
sir.
That's kind of funny.
Why does he have to wear panties?
I mean...
You can't wear an evening gown with normal underwear.
No, you got to go with the whole set.
Next semifinal was Crash Holly and Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle comes to the ring, and when his name key comes up, everyone's got, like, their title underneath. His is American Hero.
Yeah, like, something, I don't know.
He won. He's certified. He went to school for it. Angle applies a cradle takedown, and then hits a running clothesline into the corner to Crash, and then Holly comes back with kicks in the corner as the announcers are starting to debate... Jim Ross brings up that this is a Cinderella story for Crash Holly, and Lawler takes issue with this, and they start debating the plot holes and different fairy tale plots between Cinderella and Snow White.
Okay.
So, great. Top rope drop kick is hit by Angle for a two count, then he drops Holly on the top rope with a guillotine, and then into the Olympic Slam and pins him. 3 minutes and 58 seconds.
A really fast-paced match. And
they had like no time, so you had to go pretty quick.
Yeah, but I thought this was good. better matches in Crash's career, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just found these matches. It was just like, you had so much to get to. It's like, you had no time for some of these matches. I almost would have preferred if they just did like the four-man tournament and give these matches some time, because you certainly had the workers that could pull these off. There are highlights from the house show the night before at Madison Square Garden, which they trumpeted as the 14th consecutive sellout, featuring Donald Trump in the crowd, and Lawler interviewed him and said his favorite talent was The Rock. Michael Cole then interviews Kane, who says it's all about one thing, becoming WWF champion. And Coachman is with The Undertaker, who he asks, Undertaker, your response to what Kane just said. And Undertaker says the title is the most coveted prize, and he didn't come to Boston to lose.
It's still odd to me to see a Biker Taker promo. You know what I mean? To see Undertaker talk like he's a normal person.
He would have been, if this came along in this promotion, he would have been an Aces and Eights guy.
Yeah, definitely.
That was his calling, really. I wonder if he watches that show.
Maybe. I don't know.
Jim Ross is teeing up the next match. This is something to hear as Ross tees up the evening gown match, where he's like,
"Wow, is it going to be good?
Well, I'll tell you, this is going to be
different. Oh, now I don't know about that.
This is going to be different. Ladies and gentlemen, don't adjust your sets. Pat Patterson is the hardcore champion. He will defend against another great wrestling veteran, Jerry Briscoe. But they'll compete in drag. Here's how this one came about."
He was just so embarrassed to be calling this. And it goes into the video package that Way recapped earlier, where Patterson, he's pouring champagne over top of Briscoe when he wins the hardcore title as a spoof on the Andre Hogan champagne spot, and then pins him after the champagne gets into Briscoe's eyes. They had these cheesy graphics with like computer font to there was a radar, a red alert flash, like just a shitty video package.
But perfect for this.
Sure, yes. Briscoe then comes out in a dress to Real American.
Yeah.
I don't know if this was a dig at Hogan or what.
Oh,
but
of course.
This was their, because he had come out to Hogan's theme regularly. But yeah, this was quite the...
This was awesome.
Quite the entrance.
This was great.
And it always ensured a pop. When you play Real American, fans are going to pop for
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And Ross calls Briscoe a once great athlete and the brother of Jack Briscoe, pretty much putting into context, what the fuck are we watching here? And Patterson comes out with a shopping cart, throwing candy out from his cleavage.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Who looked like the more convincing woman? I would say Patterson.
I would say Briscoe, actually.
Really?
I don't know. He's got a more womanly face.
Well, this match began for the hardcore title after Patterson kissed Howard Finkel, and he tells Briscoe on the microphone that he looks like an old drag queen, and cuts a promo on him, and then offers to lay down for Briscoe and give him the title. But then, surprise, surprise, he turns on Briscoe when Briscoe goes to pin him. At one point, Patterson lifts Briscoe's dress and smacks him as Ross asks, "Is this what the business has come to?" Feeds Briscoe a banana. And then Patterson grabs a maxi pad out of his underwear and starts attacking Briscoe with a maxi pad. Then lifts his dress to go stick his ass into Briscoe's face, but ends up taking a low blow. Ross just calls this hideous. The crowd is booing and chanting boring as Briscoe then comes back with a Bronco Buster. Crash Holly then runs out to attack Patterson and Briscoe, strips Briscoe of his dress, hits Patterson with a trash can, and pins Patterson at 2 minutes and 48 seconds, runs off with the hardcore title, as Ross says, "Thank goodness, this might be, Way, the worst match I've ever seen."
Wow, really?
I'm serious. Like, if I had to think of my worst match I've ever witnessed, with a combination of just being terrible, and also at the same time, I remember this match on pay-per-view and thinking, please end, so no one walks in and sees me watching this.
Yeah.
This was just one of those absolutely embarrassing moments.
I thought it was fun.
You watched this with your brother.
Yeah, my brother. I mean, like I said, there's some odd curiosity from a casual person when they see, like, that's weird. That's not something I would see on any other TV show. A grown man, two grown men in drag having a wrestling match, pulling bananas and tampons out of their their pants.
Where do you think the tampon was?
In his pants.
Like, where, though? Like, just tucked in somewhere or inserted somewhere? I don't
know. It was a maxi pad. Sorry, not a tampon.
Oh.
Listen, man.
We didn't have high definition, so we couldn't exactly decipher.
Would this deserve, you know, my money on a pay-per-view show? Probably not. Maybe this might have been better served on TV, but
you didn't have a problem with this.
I didn't. I just thought it was fun. It was like, it's not like it's the main event. It was just one of those, like, you know, freak show type of things in the mid-card comedy. That's all.
Well, that's I'm glad for historic sake that matches like this do exist and that they are out there for people to go back and
see. They're pretty colorful.
It's fun to look back at what the WWF presented then versus now.
I'd rather watch this match than, I don't know, a 3-minute nothing, you know, what do we have? Val Venus versus Rikishi.
As you do look at demographics, though, there is a large portion of, like, an older audience that maybe... There was a place for the Pat Pattersons and Mae Youngs and those kind of angles.
Absolutely. They're just comedy. You know, it's just comedy.
I'm fine with comedy. I just didn't find this to be good comedy. Okay. This felt like, you know what? I can't even say, it didn't even feel like these two felt like they were embarrassed. They were having, Pat Patterson was having the time of his life during this match.
I think they both were.
So, the Dudleys are then in the back as we follow this with a table. As D-Von yells about beating DX and Tori, and Tori's name being written on a table here in spray paint, and they went to a video on the feud here. This is the original Tori, not Tori Wilson. And we get the video package here where they were about to powerbomb Tori through a table when Jerry Briscoe, of all people, made the save, and it ended up with Bubba being put on the table and Tori splashing Bubba through the table on Raw. And then an angle that I totally forget, where DX and Edge and Christian beat up the Dudleys, put them in a dumpster, and drove them off a ramp.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
I don't remember this at all, which is telling of, like, how many of these angles... Like, even the Rikishi spot. Like, that's a big bump.
Yeah.
You have zero recollection of this. Where
It also happened on SmackDown, which might mean that it gets a bit less play than
a lot of angles
on Raw.
But, I mean, the Foley and Terry Funk dumpster spot,
yeah.
I think a lot of people remember that. And this... Yeah. No recollection of. But you're right. SmackDown wasn't even airing in Canada at this point. So I can see how some Canadian viewers were not as fully up on what was happening at SmackDown during this time. So we go to Road Dogg, X-Pac, and Tori taking on the Dudley Boys in a handicap table dumpster match.
So Tori is in this match.
Yes.
Yeah.
So 3-on-2. The rules, as best I can explain, are that the Dudleys either have to put all three of their opponents through tables... Or DX puts the Dudleys into the dumpster. And that's how they can win. And not the other way around.
So, okay. So each team has their own match, basically.
Yeah. There's different ways to win based on who you are.
Okay. All right. All right, then.
Because why have a straight-up match? The heels have to... those are just the rules here. Starts off as a typical tag match in the ring. Then they tag in Tori, who kicks D-Von in the heels corner. Ross says that Tori trained at a dojo, to which Lawler asks what a dojo is. it's a Bubba Bomb to Road Dogg. They do the What's Up headbutt, which was at its... this was kind of right when that commercial was still airing, I think.
Yeah,
mid-2000.
So. Yeah. And then D-Von stays in her car.
Oh, this was so... Uncomfortable. He does the headbutt to Road Dogg and X-Pac and then to Tori. And yeah, he just lands on her crotch and stays there.
Like his head buried between her legs.
Uncomfortably long.
And like what were they trying to simulate here? I mean...
Like was he knocked out by...
Or did he just... like?
Did she have a cup?
I don't know. Or did he just choose to stay there? In which case, like, isn't
that... Like, I'm not kidding. If that was, like, an impromptu spot and that happened today, that guy would be fired.
Of course. I mean, I would think that it wasn't impromptu.
But it's like, it was weird. Like, the announcers didn't call attention to it. No one knew how to react to this. I think they were just as alarmed as us. What are we watching here?
I think maybe they're going for some type of, like, joke there. Like, oh, look at this. His face is in her crotch. But it certainly didn't feel like a joke. It just felt like uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a very weird spot. DX gets the advantage and puts the Dudleys into the dumpster, but they escape before Jimmy Corderas can see them, and they are gone. They disappear in the dumpster, out the side panels of the dumpster.
Side panels and dumpsters.
But that seems really unnecessary. Like, why would you want panels that open in a dumpster? Like, stuff's going to leak out for the practical use of a dumpster.
Somebody gets trapped.
Maybe. So then the Dudleys climb under the ring and come back and kill DX with chair shots to the head for a big pop. Then they double stack the tables on the floor, and they powerbomb Road Dogg on top. They stand on these steel steps inside the ring and powerbomb him through two tables.
Yeah, and you watch Bubba Ray Dudley do these things, and he just, there seems to be no hesitation at all. It's just like,
nope, he just goes for it.
Boom, I'm dropping you.
X-Pac then hits a spinning heel kick to D-Von and places him on a table, but Bubba shakes the ropes and crotches X-Pac, and D-Von superplexes X-Pac through a table, and then they stop Tori from leaving. She climbs into the dumpster, and then she disappears. The Dudleys are looking for her, and then X-Pac and Road Dogg appear with chairs, and they hit the Dudleys in the head with chair shots, and then they put the Dudleys into the dumpster, and DX gets the win at 9:46.
Yeah. I thought this was a really stupid match. Some nice table spots, but I thought it was kind of confusing what the rules were. First of all, it was a handicap match. Secondly, you had two sets of rules for both different teams. I didn't like it.
The Dudleys then take Tori out of the dumpster after the match because this has all been built around Tori going through a table. And X-Pac and Road Dogg are up the aisle watching this. X-Pac runs in to try and save Tori, but they end up taking X-Pac takes a 3D. Then they deliver one to Road Dogg. And then Bubba corners Tori in the corner and sticks his tongue out as if he's going to lick Tori. Gets the table with her name on it. And then they powerbomb her through this and leave her laying. And Tori would actually be out for quite a while. It was either the night before or this very spot where she fucked up her shoulder and was out for a long time after this.
Okay.
And never really wrestled again in the company. So, very odd match. And wouldn't have felt great to be Tori after this.
It just reminds me of like that the Dudley's gimmick. They're basically women beaters.
And they were babyface woman beaters.
Yeah, like, I'm just trying to think, like, what does it say about, typical average wrestling fan? Just, you know, like, this was what got a lot of people excited. And, like, even for me, too, as a fan, I don't think I really noticed the Dudleys until they started doing this type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, they did it, too, with, like, Jeff Jarrett when he was in the WWF and he started just bashing women over the head with guitars.
Right.
And I mean, it's pretty. I always viewed it as kind of cheap heat. You know what I mean? Like, the crowd did really get behind it, but it does make you kind of like.
It's not even really heat. Like in this case, for them, it's like it got them good attention.
Yeah, TSN. They would always edit that kind of stuff out. They would never show it. Michael Cole is with Kurt Angle in the back and talks about this being the most important tournament in the world. And says the party is over for Rikishi, and he's going to beat Triple H for the WWF title after tonight's King of the Ring. And they show highlights of Venus attacking Rikishi from earlier. Then Coachman is with Rikishi with his arm wrapped up, and he says all the Wheaties in the world won't stop this ass from backing up.
Right.
I really didn't notice it.
Oh, you got to go back and check this out.
Okay.
Then we got the same video from the opening montage of the history of the King of the Ring. They just replayed it verbatim. In case you missed it, here it is. Past winners, no Mabel. And it takes us to the finals, Kurt Angle and Rikishi. They fight up the aisle to start, but Angle cannot body slam him and grabs his back. Angle is seated down in the corner, but Angle hits a low blow to avoid the stink face and hits a big clothesline. They start talking about past winners as Angle sends Rikishi into the steps,
But then Rikishi hits a Samoan drop, a neck breaker, as he continues to sell the arm here. And Angle is in the corner again. This time he takes the stink face from Rikishi. But then Angle runs out of the corner with an Olympic slam, but Rikishi kicks out at two. There's a sunset flip by Rikishi, who sits down on top of Angle for a two count. Crowd was into these near falls. And then Rikishi climbs to the top rope. Angle crotches him on the top, attacks him with forearms, climbs up, and hits this belly-to-belly suplex and pins Rikishi at 5:58 to become the 2000 King of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and not get a title shot.
No, not get a title shot. I found I didn't think the match really had a very strong ending. Like, it just kind of happened out of nowhere. And I didn't really find Rikishi's injury to play that big of a factor in the work of the match either. You know, Kurt Angle wins the King of the Ring. And I don't know how much it really added to his current push that he was already having. I mean, nobody really ever thinks back to Kurt Angle and think, you know, oh, King of the Ring winner. But
well, they played it up a lot when he won that title of, like, all his accomplishments in his first year, including the King of the Ring and winning the IC title, the European title, and then the WWF title. But, yeah, Angle was pretty much, you know, chosen at this point. And maybe this helped him a bit. But yeah, I think he was one of those guys who was going to make it to the main event level regardless.
Yeah.
Hunter is with Vince, Shane, and Stephanie. And Hunter's upset about Vince pissing off Linda and not allowing any interference tonight. And they show this feature from USA Today with a debate between The Rock and Mike Piazza about whether wrestling or baseball are the new national pastime for the U.S.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Over baseball.
Of course.
Then we got the main event, Triple H, Vince and Shane McMahon against The Rock, Kane, and Undertaker for the WWF title in a six-man tag, if you can understand that. Taker comes out to his Kid Rock theme, which features this stoppage where it literally says radio edit during his theme to replace Suck My Dick.
Yeah.
So that's nice of them. They should have just left it uncensored. Undertaker, he's a badass.
Yeah, they should have.
They explain that Kurt Angle is going to get the winner at Fully Loaded. And then Ross explains that Shane is all caffeined up for this match. The crowd starts chanting slut for Stephanie. Not fans of women, this crowd.
I guess not.
No. Or at least not heel women.
No.
Shane starts off the match with Kane. And Shane, you know, just does a little back and forth with him and Kane. Taker comes in at one point, hits this giant choke slam to Shane, but Rock breaks it up. Which is curious why Triple H wouldn't have broken this up.
Hmm.
Again, I was very confused as to whether Shane have won the title here. I don't know.
If I was Hunter, yeah, you're right.
I'd be like, fuck this. I'm not taking this match.
Yeah.
This is way too complex. Rock knocks Hunter and Vince off the apron, and then Hunter pulls the rope down, and Rock goes to the floor where they triple team him until Kane and Taker come help, and they start brawling with the McMahons around the ring. Hunter hits a pedigree to Rock in the ring, but Rock kicks out, and Rock continues to get beaten down in the heel corner. He eventually, Vince comes in briefly and then tags in Hunter. Vince hits a low blow on the Rock and gets a two count, and then Rock comes back with a Samoan drop to Hunter, and then Shane makes a save. Taker fights with the McMahons on the floor, and then Kane throws the Undertaker into the steel steps. And then The Rock is going for the people's elbow to Hunter, but Kane cuts him off with a choke slam, indicating that Kane is only fighting for himself here, and Hunter thinks that Kane is going to help him. Are you confused? Kane is not with Hunter, because he then tombstones Hunter. Taker then pulls Kane to the floor, and Taker hits a chair shot to Kane's head, and then Taker choke slams Shane off the top rope through the announce desk, and then just stands there. Taker just stands there on the floor as Vince goes for the people's elbow and the Rock back in the ring. Rock stops him, hits the Rock Bottom, and pins Vince McMahon to win the WWF title as Taker is too late to make the save. And this one goes about 18 minutes, and Taker leaves on his bike telling the Rock that he owes him one, and then Rock hits Vince with a belt shot, stands on top of him to pose as the show goes off the air, and Ross saying that the Rock is fully loaded in Boston. Either as a tease for the pay-per-view or saying that Rock is drunk. One of the two. Strange main event. And really? Rock is now the new champion.
Yeah, really convoluted rules. Again, you know, a tag match for the world title. It was very strange, although I did think it made for some interesting dynamics once the faces started to turn on one another. And all throughout this match, it was kind of like Rock was in there, and he was refusing to tag out because he didn't want the other guys to have the opportunity.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. But it's... It certainly is a hard match to sell, and I don't know how well this pay-per-view did, but like if they did a similar stipulation these days, I would be like, that's retarded.
Yeah, I agree with you. They were at such a hot period at this point that they were able to get away with pretty much anything on pay-per-view. I mean, they had a really, really hot streak at this point, obviously. So that was the King of the Ring from 2000, not one of the more well-remembered King of the Rings. If anything, I think it kind of under-delivered what it could have produced on paper. I gave this show a 3 out of 10. It really didn't do a whole lot for me.
I give it about a 3 out of 10 as well.
Let's go to everyone's feedback. We start off with Sean from New Jersey, who writes, I was excited to go back and watch this King of the Ring for the first time since it aired in 2000. The show pretty much was what I had remembered, a mixed bag of good and bad. However, one thing that really stuck out after rewatching were the sheer number of times the divas were physically attacked by their male counterparts and how it was acceptable even for babyfaces. Matt Hardy throws a punch at Trish Stratus. Rikishi throws Trish on the mat and attempts a bonsai drop. Test manhandles Lita on the apron. Albert attempts a chokeslam on Lita. Jericho kisses a married woman and promptly drops her on the mat. And there was even a handicap match built on the Dudleys powerbombing Tori through a table. Just to top things off, we got the classic hardcore evening gown match featuring a maxi pad as a weapon. Anyone who's ever claimed that WWE was misogynistic, King of the Ring 2000 is your proof. I like the overall tournament build with a hurt Rikishi and a young Angle. Some people may shit on the main event, but the main had good psychology and features an insane Shane McMahon bump. What more could you want? 5 Rikishi promos out of 10. Right. So see?
Very nice.
This was 1 year before Shane's greatest match of all time.
Against Kurt Angle. That's absolutely right.
Yep.
Up next we go to
Johan
from Varberg, Sweden. Usually I don't have the time to post my thoughts, but on Friday I got out of work early, so why not watch King of the Ring and post my first feedback? Never seen this pay-per-view before, but I'm pleasantly surprised with what I saw. I think you could have done more with the Benoit Rikishi match. In my opinion, it's a weak motivation to get a DQ in the tournament just because. Chris could have kicked his ass any time of the week, but only won the King of the Ring once a year. It's just the lazy way to take the easy way out with the booking. The Eddie Venus match gave us Lawler's puppy's obsession and the crowd's chance for the same. Later on, China would heed the call and give us movies that have scarred me for life. Oh, anyway. Okay, match. The high point of the night was the next matches, Angle, Jericho, and the tag match. Nice technical match from Kurt and Chris, and good up-tempo tag match. I did not follow wrestling at this time, but going in now to watch this, I just wonder if there was any doubt that Angle would win. Okay, main event. A sort of power story with Triple H and McMahon feels fresh. With the story and Triple H, same old entrance in mind. I don't say his character is stale. Oh, wait, that is just what I'm saying.
Up next to Ronaldo, Pat Patterson versus Jerry Briscoe in an evening gown match. I do remember that. I also remember how the WWF could literally put anything on TV and it would draw huge ratings no matter what. The rise of Kurt Angle as the goofy yet skilled heel, and the never-ending saga between Triple H and The Rock. I was 20 at the time, and being in Italy, the only way I had to watch wrestling was via tape trading. The good old days of waiting weeks for a pack of tapes to arrive and then spending the rest of the week watching show after show back-to-back. If I'm not mistaken, this was the last time King of the Ring had the entire tournament on pay-per-view instead of just the semifinals and the final. And really, of all the concepts WWE should bring back, the original King of the Ring tournament is one of them. Yes, it is true. It was the last time they had the 8-person on one night.
Up next, we go to Mark McKenzie. 2000 was probably the best pay-per-view year, one of the best pay-per-view years that WWE has ever had. Every show is a great show except WrestleMania, Survivor Series, and this one. The booking of the tournament is absolutely mind-boggling. You have Angle, Jericho, Benoit, and Eddie in it, and eliminate all but one of them in the first round so we can be privileged to 3 matches for Rikishi and 2 matches for Crash Holly. Who thought that was a recipe for a good show? This tournament was as badly booked as 1995 and 1999 were, but not remembered like that due to Angle absolutely being a much better winner than Mabel and Mr. Ass. I had never seen the Patterson-Briscoe match, and I had at least a morbid curiosity to see how bad it was, but it was just any other boring Attitude Era hardcore match where the guys just happened to be old men in drag. The crowd absolutely shit on it, and rightfully so, but I'm sure Vince was rolling on the floor laughing hysterically, which is the only reason it happened. Speaking of Vince, what a stupid main event. No singles title should ever be defended in a tag match, especially when Vince and Shane are participants. Why couldn't they have just done a four-way with Rock, Triple H, Taker, and Kane?
Let's go to Mike from Caledon. Someone in the opening video said, when you win King of the Ring, you become an instant player. Well, remember the year prior when Billy Gunn became a main eventer? I don't. How is it fair to Triple H to have to team with Shane McMahon and Joe Cool, the name that King kept calling Vince, which was annoying? Triple H and a 2 way below average wrestlers against 2 future Hall of Famers and Kane. In the incredibly eerie promo of the night, Benoit said his actions speak for themselves, and the King said it's a bad omen. I give this show 4 out of 10. The only good thing from this show is that Shane McMahon was taken out near the end of the match in a spot that has been forgotten, and after this, Tori version 1 broke up with X-Pac, and she basically was never seen again.
Well, that's what happens when you break up with Sean Waltman.
Paul Ellett, while I'm a fan of one-night tournaments, this show probably won't go down as one of the better examples. No real standout matches from the tournament and some unusual decisions regarding who progressed further than others. However, like all 2000 WWF pay-per-views, this show is one where you sit back and enjoy just how deep the roster was. I'm a sucker for the McMahons being involved in stuff. If WWE know how to emphasize anyone's importance, it's theirs. And though it's not a popular opinion, I generally enjoy their involvement. Storylines seem to matter when it involves the McMahon. Shane's table bump is a really underrated one, probably because it doesn't involve a Titantron. This was all perfectly good filler before a great SummerSlam pay-per-view, though WWF couldn't do much wrong at this point. Trivia. There was either going to be a Trish Lita match or a Briscoe-Patterson match on this pay-per-view, but due to time constraints, there could only be one, so they combined the two, thus the evening gown stipulation. Just horrible.
Up next, we've got Alan Gaynor, who writes, you would think that an event featuring a one-night tournament with the likes of Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, and Chris Jericho would be amazing, but you would be wrong. While 99-2000 was a great time business-wise for the WWE, if you go back and watch the pay-per-views from those 2 years, for the most part, they are quite disappointing. At least the right person won this event. Angle was great from the moment he arrived in 99, and it's sad that his career was derailed. Despite his personal issues, he has continued to put on amazing performances. It's just a shame that he isn't doing it in front of the largest audience possible. Until this viewing, I had only watched the show in Scramble Vision, but back then JR's commentary during the evening gown match really painted such a vivid picture that I felt I could not just hear the awfulness. I could see it as well. I don't know if this show is worthy of the title of the King, maybe Prince or Duke of the Ring. It's better than Billy Gunn and Mabel years, but not nearly up to the quality of the Bret Hart and Ken Shamrock shows.
We next go to Alexander Rios, who says, you know, for an Attitude Era pay-per-view, this show was a mangled mess. I didn't get to watch the whole thing since I was only able to find segments on YouTube, but what I did find was Kurt Angle winning King of the Ring, the dreaded evening gown match, which I forgot this was during the Attitude Era when Crash Holly was over. What happened to Elroy Jetson of the WWE? Oh, he passed away. Any 6-man tag title match, tag match, no less, that made no sense, and it is proof that bad booking is universal. The Attitude Era was not immune. So Triple H, Vince, and Shane take on Undertaker, Gut included, because to me he was quite pudgy at this time, Kane wearing the classic red suit for the last time on pay-per-view, and of course The Rock. At the end of the day, I'm just glad The Rock won, because not only was he the only guy on the team worthy of it at the time, but I was so done with Triple H already. Again, another theme that transcends to today. For a show not booked by Vince Russo, it sure had his influence. It sure had his influence on it. Still enjoyable, though.
One I missed here. Danny Chestnuts from the North End. This is one of my most fondly remembered pay-per-views, especially since it was in my hometown of Boston. To this day, 2 highlights stand out for me. Kurt Angle's amazing performance all the way through the tournament, working with 3 very different performers and putting on a unique and impressive match each time, and the 6-man tag main event, which confusingly put the title back on The Rock. The ending of the main event always irked me, since it marked the 3rd straight month in which Rock and Triple H swapped the title. Rock won at Backlash, Triple H at Judgment Day, and then Rock at King of the Ring. It seemed like the writing staff could never really decide who should hold the strap strap. Thankfully, Rock would have a prolonged run with the title until October, providing a little stability until Angle stunned the wrestling world at No Mercy. All in all, this was a great show, a solid main event despite the outcome, a fantastic King of the Ring tournament, and very little filler on the card despite the horrendous Patterson-Briscoe debacle. 7 Olympic slams out of 10.
Steven in Chicago. I found the show impossible to get through. I made it up to the end of the Angle Jericho match and then had to throw the towel in. We can at least be thankful that the 2013 version of the McMahon family saga does not involve Linda. Back in 2000, Vince was really good at playing the despicable husband, but Linda was always awful on camera. Angle was so entertaining back in this period. It's sad to see what his career has become. Hopefully one day he'll take his rightful place in the WWE Hall of Fame. I thought Benoit was great at getting crowd heat even before the beatdown, but then the crowd seemingly decided to sit down and be quiet. 2 Joe Cools out of 10 for the first half of the show.
And finally, Paul from Germany. This was one of the weirdest pay-per-views booking-wise I've ever seen. The actual tournament felt almost like an afterthought. Why was Jericho versus Angle in the first round? Why did Valvinus beat Eddie Clean? Who was the face in the Dudley DX match? That match also made me feel really uncomfortable. I know Russo wasn't with the company anymore at that point, but handicap table dumpster match is such a Russo-esque stipulation. Bubba Dudley really has come a long way from the guy that gets off by putting women through tables. The tag title match had a varying quality. The stuff with Edge and Christian and the Hardys was excellent, but after that, the booking got weird again. When I watched the final part of the match, I noticed that the booking seemed familiar, and since I recently watched some old WWF stuff thanks to the OSW guys, I recognized it. Too Cool was booked like LOD of all people. Stay out of the multi-team tag match, come in late, hit your offense, don't sell, don't do the clean job, and look really angry, constipated afterwards. Well, what can you say about the Patterson-Briscoe match? At least Patterson looked like he had fun. It got crash over, though, since the crowd popped huge when he ended the match, but this is not a pay-per-view match. As a 5-minute time waster on Raw, it's okay, but not on pay-per-view. You could have given that time to Crash and Angle instead. Main event was just an overbooked mess. The less said about that match, the better. Best match is Jericho and Angle. MVP was Kurt Angle. This is probably my favorite version of him. So funny with all the little things like American Hero on his title card and the little jump and the woo when he wins. Yet he is also a serious threat in the ring. You can compare this version of Angle with his push to the push Daniel Bryan gets at the moment. He does all the comedy stuff, yet you have to take him seriously in the ring. All right, well, thanks everyone for your feedback, which you can always leave each week at lawradio.proboards.com. It's going to signal an end to this show, looking at the King of the Ring 2000. But next week, Way, is episode number 200, which you and I had no clue about until someone posted this, and I'm taking their word for it, so I hope that someone didn't add things up wrong.
Yeah.
But for next week, Way, what do you want to review for this historic edition?
I didn't know it was episode 200.
Some pressure on you right now.
I mean, I don't know. What should we do that's worthy? What did we do for...
Not an adult film.
Yeah. What did we do for episode 100?
Oh, God. I don't know. I don't know if we
did we do
made note of episode 100.
Well, I don't know. What do you think it should be?
I'm leaving it up to you. I go with the waves of waiting. You have high and low waves when it comes to pro wrestling.
I guess we should go to the request thread.
Sure.
To be honest with you,
we haven't gone to the thread in a while.
Yeah, I mean,
is there something on there that strikes your interest that has some votes?
There definitely was. I don't know if it'd be worthy for it. What is it? Episode 200, though.
We determine what's good enough for episode 200. It's our show. Who cares? Doesn't have to be a big deal.
All right. Well, I wanted to. I'm actually going to the last request right here from Andrew Sheehy, who says he'd love to hear a review of the documentary titled Anderson Silva Like Water, which chronicles his journey to his UFC 117 bout against Chael Sonnen.
Oh, wow. That's actually on, I think it's on Netflix
now. Netflix?
I think so.
It's also on the internet if...
All right. Yeah, sure. Let's watch that. Maybe some people will not like that choice, but you know what? This isn't a straight-on MMA review. This is very timely. We could be reviewing this in the wake of either Anderson Silva's latest title defense or coming off a major loss.
Yeah.
So I like that choice quite a bit.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. Why? Okay. You don't?
I love it. He's my favorite fighter.
Well, I've never seen that documentary, so I would love to.
I guess I'm just I worry that our audience won't give a shit.
Maybe they won't. This will be an interesting social experiment. But you know what? If there's ever an MMA documentary that I think people will cling to, this was all filmed during the lead-up to the first Chael Sonnen fight. So I think that there's lots to be taken from this. And obviously, I haven't seen the documentary, so I can't comment on it. But sure, let's review that next week. I'm fine with watching that.
Great.
And we'll for those that are going to be all upset about us talking about MMA, we'll be back to doing a wrestling review. Or you can listen to the hours of other shows we've got on this site next week instead. So there you go.
Yeah.
You owe it to yourself to download episode number 200. So in the meantime, we are off now. You can give Way a follow at Way0937, at I am John Pollock. And you can always check in at liveaudiowrestling.com. Daily updates. All of our shows are up there, as well as on iTunes by subscribing to Live Audio Wrestling. Lightning quick downloads on iTunes, I must say, Way.
That's great.
So quick. I hit download, and already I'm listening to the show before it's like even the bar is full of saying it's downloaded. I can already hear it. That's how quick it is.
That's wonderful.
It's unbelievable.
Please leave some feedback for us on iTunes, in the iTunes store. If there's an Android equivalent, please leave some feedback there as well. Improve our ranking within the iTunes rankings.
We always love that stuff.
Because we want to be number one.
Absolutely. We didn't get into this business to be number two.
No, we didn't.
No.
That's as far as we've made.
We're going to storm to the top of iTunes one day.
Help us beat, what is it?
Primetime Sports does extremely well.
I think Tim and Sid do pretty well.
Yeah.
Does Merrick's show do well?
Yeah, that hockey guy.
We got to kick his ass.
Let's look right now at what the top 10 are right now.
We want to be, especially if you're Canadian, please.
And let's break down what our realistic chances are of beating some of these. Because, you know what, we're broadcasting to a specific audience. And these guys, they get to cover the sports.
Actually,
and
Steve
shit.
Austin's been kicking ass.
He's been doing very well.
And it's a very good show, Steve Austin Podcast.
Yeah. I wish we just had one set logo on these. It'd be so much easier. But oh fuck, my computer's just crashed.
Uh-oh.
Nope, there we go. Okay. All right. So, top episodes
in the sports.
Now this is in Canada, of
yeah,
course.
The so. Canadian sports and recreation. We want to be, our goal in life is to
be we're number 7 right now.
Oh, okay.
For Sunday Night Slaw.
We want to be number 1
so
in this.
Number 1 are Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole.
No, don't go to episodes. Go to shows.
Well, that's more in an average. Let's take a look. Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole do very well, but you know what? They're leaving TSN to go to Fox Sports 1. So guess what?
That'll be over.
They're gone.
Good. So, yeah, let's hope.
Okay, number 1, Jay and Dan, forget them. They'll be gone in 2 months. Steve Austin show is number 2. So, we got to tackle that.
Yeah, it's a tough
ITV one, Tour de France? Is that about biking?
I'd assume so, yeah.
Well, I don't even know what you'd learn from that.
Yeah.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons is number 4. Football Today. There's not even football going on right now. Football doesn't even start till like September, so I don't even know what they could be talking about, like free agency and stuff. Who are some other notables here? There's one with a shark on it.
Yeah, anyway. You know, we should be way better than these guys.
We're number 60.
Oh, that's pathetic. Guys,
we need to
please,
get further up
please.
There, guys.
Download off of iTunes. Leave us some feedback. Subscribe if you haven't already. And you know, at the very least, let's aim to break it to top 50. How about that?
We're well ahead of Don Cherry with Grape Line.
These numbers vary so often.
Yeah,
like, is it like by week?
Well, I don't even know how this works. Like, look at this: the MMA show with Mauro Ranallo. He hasn't done a show in a year, and that's still 149th. So, like, what? Like, he's doing a separate podcast at this point.
Yeah.
He's not doing this one anymore.
I don't know.
I don't know how this all works.
I don't know how this works either.
But just leave us feedback, folks. Get us up there. Man, there's some obscure podcasts on here. Rowdy Racing News. The Golf Psychology Podcast.
I wonder if, like...
If Patrick Cohen, PhD.
I wonder if Rowdy Racing News is doing a similar talk where they're like
live wrestling.
What the fuck is
maybe
that?
Maybe they review old races. Review a race.
The Rowdy Racing Podcast is the voice of the NASCAR race fan. Get your daily dose of Sprint Cup racing news, driver interviews, fantasy racing tips, and garage gossip from your host Buck Fever, Bass Masters, and Buzz Cutler.
Rowdy Racing News. That has to be a play on Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Probably. How are these real names? Buck Fever and Bass Masters? No way are those
Bass
legitimate.
Masters.
And
awesome.
Buzz Cutler. Awesome.
My new favorite podcast.
Well, I might have to give this one a listen.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get on out of here, folks. Once again, go to liveaudiowrestling.com and leave us feedback on iTunes. We're going to go out of here with a song that was... what?
Nothing.
What, you want to go out with Bleached?
No.
Ride Your Heart?
No, man.
What are you pointing to?
Nothing. I was pointing to that.
Oh,
you needed the suggestions.
Oh, well, why not? Let's go out with Ride Your Heart to commemorate being here at my house.
Yes.
Here it is, Bleached. Ride Your Heart.
Do you know the song?
No, I don't even know if Bleached is the group or Bleached is the song. But I'm going to guess Bleached is the group.
John has, John's fiance, I guess, likes this band. I don't even know what it was. I was just pointing to it.
Well, let's listen to it. Let's see how it sounds.
Cool.